the victims to be responsible for the burden of proof, that's a whole nother level of oppression.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Tainted Tap Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Catronelle Davis, sociologist and author of the book Tainted Tap, Flint's Journey from Crisis to Recovery. In today's episode, you'll hear a conversation that I had with Monica Galloway, who has served as a City of Flint Council member representing the 7th Ward since 2013. In our conversation, Councilwoman Galloway talked about the realities facing Flint following the water crisis. She also weighed in on the $641 million settlement offer, what is needed to make Flint whole, and much, much more in our discussion ahead.
There's enough data to show that this happened. This really happened. Everybody in the world knows that it happened. And yet you're saying to the people, yeah, we know it happened. And we know that your disparity is that you don't have good medical insurance many times. You don't have access to reliable transportation or whatever. And so, like you said, the roadblocks are there, but shame on the system that thinks that in a court of law, this is justice. You can't make this kind of stuff up. This is like what best-selling movies are made of.
Enjoy the show. Today, we have Councilwoman Monica Galloway, who's giving of her time and energy. Welcome, Councilwoman Galloway.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. Really and truly, I'm a Flint native. This is a very important topic. Flint is not fixed. We don't want to make it seem as though there's a generation lost in Flint, but we want to make sure that the wrongs that were done to Flint are addressed. And we want to make sure that the previous histories and neglect that caused the crisis to even become a thing are addressed appropriately so that the people in the city of Flint get what they deserve. Again, I'm just so happy to have Councilwoman Galloway today. Born and raised in San Diego, California, she and her Flint native husband and two sons relocated to Flint in 1995. When Councilwoman Galloway secured the city council seat in 2013, she became the first African-American and woman to hold this position in Ward 7. Now, Councilwoman Galloway, you are a wife, a mother, a licensed realtor, and now a city leader.
I get to add grandmother to that.
Oh my, congratulations.
Thank you.
Please tell me, how did you come to do what you do?
So to be honest, there were billboards on Dort Highway. I call them the two twin towers. They're strip clubs. And the billboards just started getting just worse. And so I didn't know where to go or what you could do. And so I just kept hearing it. I don't know if you ever have like intuition.
Oh, for sure.
I just kept hearing city council literally in my head. I'm like, what is that? You know? And so I went to city council to ask about what can be done. And then I started hearing elections. Sometimes I just get one word. So needless to say, I was the block club secretary. And, you know, I said to my husband, I said, I think you should run for city council. And he took a few days and he said, no. I said, I think the Lord wants you to run for city council. And then he said, after a few days, he said, yeah, I'm sure the Lord is not saying that to me. And so I said, well,
I love it.
It's so strong. You just think as a wife, you know, you're birthing that thing. And so I said, I don't know, maybe he wants me to run. Right. And so I remember saying to the Lord, I don't want to run against Dale Wayhill. I think he's doing a good job, you know.
Yeah.
And he used to come to our block clubs and he says, hey, if you know anybody interested in city council, I'm not running for a re-election. You know, have them come talk to me. And so I look over at my husband and I'm going, yeah, no, definitely not. And so needless to say, I sat down with him and he was very frank. And he said, you will win the primary, but there's never been an African-American in the seat. There's never been a female. And there is someone that has run and she's very, very active. And so you won't win.
Hmm.
And he said, I don't mean any disrespect. He said, I'm just telling you the history of the seat. And I said, I understand that. And then he told me how much it cost to run. And I'm like, oh, yeah, absolutely not. I didn't know what they did, as you know, how they, if they got paid or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just really following the intuition within me. And I remember getting so discouraged talking to some who were seen as community leaders. And they were very emphatic that because I wasn't born and raised in Flint, my family didn't have enough of a history.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I wouldn't be received. And I almost gave up.
But you pushed through.
But that push, it was. And I realized I had like an accelerated course. And I start. And the very first thing, ironically, that I started to learn about was the KWA. Because at that time, it was on the forefront, the city taking part in the KWA.
You're absolutely
right. And
so
that's how I really got started and started learning about that. And who knew that it would lead to all of what we are experiencing?
Yeah, who knew? It's been a journey for Flint, especially when you consider what happened after the emergency manager took control and the water source changed. Who would have known that it would have taken as long as it has taken to actually try to address the issues that the city is confronting? My concern is people's resilience at this stage.
You're telling the truth.
Just being sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm.
My concern with folks in Flint is their capacity to stay in the game despite the long recovery. But quite frankly, the current crisis was in the making for decades.
Right. Right. Can I just say this? Although we have a diverse community, I'm just speaking from the African American position.
Oh, please do.
And we come from an ancestral background of injustice,
mm-hmm.
and still pulling ourselves up, right? We've been often, from the very inception of the nation, we've been conditioned, if you will, to expect to be on the losing end of something.
Absolutely.
And make the best out of it. And as a people, I think that we have done very well with that. My frustration has come in that there is something in me that's saying enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
We can't always, and I'm so tired of the cliches, you know, when you got lemons, make lemonades. How about that's not true? Because without sugar, it's still lemon with water, right?
That's correct. That's correct.
You got to deal with the cards you've been dealt. Well, how about when somebody dealing the cards is cheating, right?
That's
so
correct.
I'm just over all of those cliches, and injustice is injustice. Inequality is inequality. Inequity is inequity. And we have to begin to address that and not allow any longer our children to be forced into a position that they should never experience and then say, but perform.
That's correct.
And so mm-hmm. that's what I'm over. And so the generations and centuries of injustice, it almost seems to me, and I think with your passion, I think we're feeling the same way, where we're saying, no, it's time to address the underlying current, if you will, that still leads to genocide, oppression,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And just injustice. And I think from you still talking about this, we're tired of it, and we won't be silent anymore.
You shouldn't be. You shouldn't be. Much of my work as a scholar has been about telling the story of poor folk, the conditions they face, the issues that they have to navigate, despite their best efforts.
Right.
We assume that poor folks wake up not wanting to do a thing to support themselves. And so when tragedy or hazards emerge in their community, it's like, oh, what are y'all going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, what we know is that those issues, when they don't get addressed, they stay there and they get worse.
Right.
What I love is, again, we have folks like you who stay up, from what I gather in watching these videos of city council meetings, you're staying up hours battling folk.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes your own colleagues on procedural issues, questions about rules. And then sometimes you're faced with irate residents who are just frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You're faced with gridlock that's caused by interpersonal conflict.
This council doesn't seem to display the political will to do what's right. We want to do what's convenient. And then when the community looks at us like we have no decorum or professionalism, we want to make excuses. And so I'm not going to tolerate, as the president, even if you don't respect me, you should respect the office. And so you guys are going to set the precedent tonight. You are going to, Mr. Griggs consistently sits in that seat and makes disrespectful comments. I sit next to him every meeting. And so today he just decided to be loud and boisterous with it. And so I'm not going to tolerate being abused by him or any of my other colleagues. And so I will not withdraw what I said. This community is going to see for the first time if this council is going to have the political will to set a stage and precedent to do what is right. And it is not because of his color of his skin. It is not about how little or how major what he did was. He was wrong, and we have to decide if we are going to judge what is wrong on a consistent basis, or we gonna do it when it's convenient, or Facebook addresses it enough for you to decide that it's worth suing. And so I'm not changing what I said. He was out of order. I gave him two additional chances, and he not only did he not stop, but he continued to say what I was saying was a waste of time when it was voted on by this council and I did not go over my time. It was not disrespectful, but it's clear that he had zeroed his ear in. He wasn't listening to one thing that I had said, and that's okay. And
point of information.
What is your point of information?
If Mr. Griggs is removed, can he sue the city and get paid like Mr. Mays did?
Now I want you, the point of information, I want this community to see this type of behavior. Because we're not trying to unify here. Now, he can go through any procedure that any other resident and or council person does. And so I'm not going to tolerate it, but it takes 9 council people, 5, to start saying that that type of behavior is enough. And so I've done my part. I'm not withdrawing the decision of the chair. And so now the decision of the chair is coming to a vote. If you agree with the chair, you are saying that Mr. Griggs was, in fact, out of order. He did not surrender to being warned. And so now he is being removed from the meeting. If you say no to the chair, you are saying that he can stay and the chair doesn't get the doesn't rule him out of order. And so, Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
I'm not the person to pass any judgment. I did look at over 10 years of city council meetings. So I don't think that what I've been watching are sort of people out of control, led by their own self-interest. I've been watching passionate people clash, oftentimes for reasons that are not very clear. Then I watch clash happen for the sake of trying to get to the heart of the matter and find out or talk about what's best for this for the city of Flint. And so I'm interested in knowing what keeps you motivated in spite the tough circumstances that are facing the city and the infighting and everything else that essentially undermine efforts to get things done.
So I can tell you emphatically, there is an expectation within me that realizes that I owe it to the generations after me to fight for it to be better for them. And when I say that, I took a political science class. And one of the things that is shared is people that go into politics, which is public service, not all this stuff that people are putting labels on is politics. I'm arguing that's not what politics is. It's public service. And anyway, it said that generally there is a desire to help, or they're frustrated with something. But they also said that it can become so challenging that people decide to just move away. Mm-hmm. And I realize that I am very fortunate. I have a great relationship with my husband, and I really mean that. And he takes very good care of me. And so one of the things I realize is, if not me, who? And I know we say that, but my grandson was born in the year that we switched over. He was born in 2014. And so if we're not involved and our voices are not heard, who will fight for us? I mean, who will take the responsibility? I think about the sacrifices of the Harriet Tubmans of the world. Not that I'm in any way equating myself to them. The Martin Luther Kings of the world, the Malcolm X of the world, the ones that knew that we someone has to continue to fight, because it's so easy to give up.
That's right.
It's easy to just walk away and say, no way. But the reality is, do you have the ability to look into the next generation's eyes and say, when I had the ability to make a difference, even if people didn't want to hear it, I did. I tell people I am only occupying this seat until the next generation decides that they're ready for it. You know, I'm not going to be a lifetime politician, if you will. I am only here to fight for the next person that takes the reign. And so when the resistance gets tough, sometimes I have to go into my secret place and cry.
Yeah.
And then I put on my big girl pants and I say, okay, now what? Right. And that's so, right. But I can tell you that the people that I've met, like you said, the resilience of this community that just refuses to give up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they refuse. You can't look into their faces and give up. You just cannot do it. And that's what motivates me to, as long as they want me to, be their voice to say, okay, you know what? Here we go, you guys, right? Because I'm tired. There is so much that hasn't been uncovered that I'm just baffled that it hasn't even happened. Like, we're focused on things that are not even the root cause. You said it. I can't wait for somebody to finally expose the true underlying factor of how we got here and the illegal, in my opinion, undertones of what has happened and is still happening.
Oh, absolutely. We have to fight because we have to fight. I tend to believe that we give poor people a really hard look. We say, well, you're not involved in your own liberation. You don't care. Oh, you didn't show up to the protest 50,000 deep, so you're not really concerned, or this is a non-issue. But I'm somebody who got the data on those kids directly from the state of Michigan. Oh, there are problems. Nobody imagined anything. And lead has been a problem. It didn't just begin. And so when I think the whole purpose of upending the systemic inequalities, or the push for that, requires honesty. At the same time, it requires a longstanding and consistent commitment to social justice, because it's not going to happen easily. Come up with our reasons for why it's a good reason to stop doing whatever we're doing. Oh, they're fine now. As you know, I believe the state of Michigan essentially did some of that in 2016 when they, you know, decided that the water was fine despite the ongoing efforts to fix the service lines. And so it's what you're talking about in terms of resilience is so key to the struggle. But without leaders positioned who understand that, you know, I have to stick in, even though it's tough, it's impossible. It really and truly is. It's so, I just want to circle around that, because what you just said was powerful. I wanted to talk about the crisis itself, the beginnings of the crisis. How were things during that time? Because it's clear that the crisis didn't happen overnight. We've been talking about the history of neglect, the fact that people have to stay involved because this is a contact sport that requires full-time employees. That said, this whole thing with regard to Flint's problem with the water didn't sort of emerge because one person made a bad decision. I would propose the following. Instead, we're actually dealing with the outcome of years of systemic infrastructure neglect. And we're also dealing with the disinvestment, state disinvestment in environmental protections. We know this if we go and look at the data that's available in these areas, the data that some agencies like the EPA, they make you work to find this stuff out. So I wanted to talk about the conditions of Flint before the crisis hit in terms of infrastructure investment, public safety. What were people dealing with? I also want you to get at water costs.
Yes. So when I first came on the city council, as you know, we were under an emergency manager.
Mm-hmm.
The water rates were already high, and the city was at the time roughly about $12 million in the deficit. So the proposal of the KWA was supposed to create the ability for Flint to have its own water source, but also it was supposed to be a revenue stream where they would, in fact, have the ability to sell raw water and things like that. One of the things that was alarming for me is I remember finding an article in which they had asked Governor Snyder at the time, how would Flint, in fact, become a stakeholder in the KWA when they were financially positioned at a negative $12 million, right? And I remember calling my investment person and I said, what is it called when they lay something in front of you and say, this is the answer, but there's really no data? And I remember he said, it's called speculative investment. So what the KWA was, we're the answer to your high water cost problems.
Okay.
We're the answer to Detroit not having the ability to continue to increase the rates on you. We're the answer. So with that deal, the city of Flint would take on about a third of that debt, which was about $100 plus million that a debt would be on the residents of the city of Flint. Now, what's interesting about that is based on our financial position, we could not secure a bond. So the county would have to take out a bond and Flint would be responsible for it because we just didn't have the equity, if you will, the capital. We didn't have the rating.
Okay.
With that, so we take on this debt. How do we take on this debt? So all of a sudden, that was supposed to happen in a certain time frame that it didn't happen in. So all of a sudden, someone, whoever, thought, well, another way that we can save money while the KWA is being built is we'll cancel our contract with Detroit and we'll go to the Flint River. Now, before, the Flint River was not an option until after the deal was signed for the KWA. And it's important that people really do their research.
Councilwoman Galloway's assessment is quite accurate. As we'll hear in this next clip from a March 2013 meeting, Genesee County Drain Commissioner Jeff Wright confirmed that just before the contract was signed, the Flint River was only considered a potential blending source.
Okay, so say for instance that we reach our capacity if we move to KWA and we couldn't buy any more water from KWA because of the capacity issue. Wouldn't our backup system automatically kick in?
You absolutely could utilize
the Flint River for blending. You're just going to have to spend a few more dollars. And let's face it, we're talking multiple years down the road before you would get to that point, theoretically. So
you would have
to spend a few more dollars on your treatment plant to be able to blend either source of water.
You know, and I know when I read the DEQ report, and, you know, I was one of the ones that asked about a DEQ report related to the Flint River. And I did appreciate it when Howard Croft finally brought it to us on that following week after I asked for it four times. You know, but in the report, it also talked about the Flint treatment facility. And they said that if we did decide to go with the blending issue, it would be beneficial to the city of Flint because it would make the treatment plant a full-time operational and all the stuff would work properly. I guess right now, we're only operating how many times? Help me out, Mr. Neely.
Twice a year, I think.
Twice.
24 hours for twice a year.
Okay.
And so once that was done, they decide to go to the Flint River.
Like a switcheroo.
A switch. April. Mm-hmm. Within, by the time October came, General Motors was before city council saying, hey, this water is negatively affecting our engines. And I remember being at that meeting and saying, wait a minute, if it's doing that to engines, what is it doing to the body of the residents? And so we made a motion to switch back to Detroit. And the emergency manager at that time was Jerry Ambrose. And he emphatically said, no, we're not paying $12.9 million to go back to Detroit. And I remember saying to him on record, I said, you know what? If it were for my life, $12 million is not a lot for one person. But can you imagine 12.9 million roughly for 100,000 people? If you divide that, that's like a to me, that didn't, it, that was like a no-brainer. But as I did further research, I learned that during that space of even April to October, if you do your research, the GLEWA, Great Lakes Water Authority, was mm-hmm. being established.
Yes, it was.
And so what people, in my opinion, I don't think people realize, and I said it I read a statement when they did the vote to go to the back to GLEWA. I said, unfortunately, what has happened is Detroit and Flint. Well, I said Detroit. I said, unfortunately, I believe that Flint was strategically taken off because we were probably their largest customer. And with that loss of income, they were able to show vulnerability. And I said, I believe that Detroit unknowingly was the victim of a hostile takeover because you had a black city that controlled the water source. And so if you look at the organizational chart of the GLEWA, you will see that during that process in which they refused to let us go back to Detroit, GLEWA was being established. And it wasn't until all of the things started happening, I think the following year, they were already established by then. GLEWA had broke out a deal with Detroit. Mm-hmm. And then the residents of the city of Flint were told that the only way we could go, if we, first of all, they said, if you don't go back to Detroit, you're going to go bankrupt because the bond debt that you took on to go to GLEWA is going to bankrupt you. Now, how is it that a debt that we should have never taken part of, that was decided not by us, but those that were called to come in and help us, how is it that now you leverage that bond debt over us and say, you know, by the way, if you don't, you're going to go bankrupt. So interestingly enough, when you talk about infrastructure, here we were with a new pipeline, no infrastructural issues at all. You're talking about 50 to 70 years life. So now the investment that we made is being used against us. And then, oh, and by the way, you thought you were getting away from Detroit, but now we're going to put you into a 30-year deal with them. And we're going to take that pipeline that you guys invested in. We're just going to take that. And so I think that that's really important for people to understand, because now you force us. And as much as we say 30 years, that's a forever deal. And so I believe that the bond debt was, in my opinion, I believe that it was secured fraudulently. I believe, I don't understand why there isn't a serious investigation into the ability to take part in a thing that would eventually lead to threatening. And even the court system, the proceeding, if you will, was oppressive. If I could say anything, it was a bully tactic. It was a force you. And what I don't understand is who the people are that are so important that everybody is saying, let's just brush over this and ignore it.
Yeah. Why can't we just call this out? Why can't we call a thing a thing? I'm confused.
Well, we would, it depending on who the players were.
And I think the silence that's presented now sort of speaks to how high ranking or how much status that person or those people have for being protected.
And unfortunately, again, and I just have to say this, I'm not saying that lead isn't a problem, but it's not the problem.
Absolutely.
But it's easy to use that because now you got community saying, oh, we got lead. Oh, we got lead. No, it's not the same thing. First of all, we were poisoned, right?
That's right.
And so we're not talking about all those other things. We know that lead paint, you know, we've been dealing with lead for years, but this wasn't that. This was negligent. And if you ever get the court recording and documents, you will read in the transcripts some of the things that were said. And we know one of them publicly was saying where someone from the MDEQ or the EPA said Flint is not worth going out on the limb for. right? There were decisions made. But in even deeper in that, you will read transcripts that show that one of the strategic things that they did in an effort that if the KWA, and it's in the transcripts, if the KWA ever came under question, there was a transcript, and I can't think of the name. I wish I could. I had the documents, and I know they're somewhere in my office, where the person said, we need to allow this to go to a vote so that we can show that all 10 elected officials said yes. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And it literally said in the transcript, just in case this came under question.
That's right. Because
we would be able to say your elected officials did this. And so therefore their agreement legitimized what we did.
We need to make sure that if anything comes out of this, we're not left holding the bat.
That is, and I don't know why, you know what I'm saying? And so all of these things are documented. And yet here we are, the residents of this community. It's like we're dispensable, right? It's like your kids don't matter. And we're not going to fight for you. And yes, you are a citizen. And even when People Magazine did the cover story, the poisoning of an American city, we would be appalled. But how long did that last? You know why? Because they're dispensable. Their babies don't matter. But our babies do matter. And eventually someone is going to pay. And this water settlement is a disgrace.
Let's talk about it.
It's the thing that's the biggest disgrace to me is that the attorneys can walk away with so much money. You know, the deadline just passed, unfortunately. You know how many residents I ran into that didn't even get a packet? And here this attorneys, this whoever they are, could possibly get 37% or so. And you didn't do more in a community that you know doesn't have access to maybe the things that they need to
You're
even take part
correct.
In it.
I looked at several of the filings, noting objections, and it was I was upset when I read some of the things that were said. Essentially, people are having to pay money that they didn't think that they would need to pay to demonstrate their injury. People are having to go to one specific attorney or who's using very limited time frames to get the documentation needed to support cases. Folks are being asked to rely on tests that are only provided by a handful of institutions in this country to demonstrate what happened to them or prove what happened to them. It just seems like there are so many roadblocks that have been put up. It's crazy.
And you know what's interesting in that? I was telling somebody, I said, can you imagine? And I love movies, right? And one of the things I thought about is the one with Damon Wayne, Major Payne.
Mm-hmm.
When his kids gave him a muffin or a cupcake with something in it that would cause his insides to go crazy, right? But because of his body, it processed it different. So it didn't negatively impact him like it should have, right? Or may have even done to someone else. But the point is this, we know emphatically that the residents of the city of Flint were poisoned. Can you imagine someone poisoning your coffee and it's learned that they poisoned your coffee, but you didn't die, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they would be prosecuted with what? Attempted murder.
That's right.
The fact that it didn't kill you or you didn't have any adverse effect to it doesn't stop the fact that you attempted to poison somebody.
Oh my God, you just said a word.
You understand what I'm saying?
You just said a word. So
for the victims to be responsible for the burden of proof, that's a whole nother level of oppression.
That's a whole nother
level of illegal behavior. And I looked it up in the Black Law Dictionary. I'm not a lawyer, but I love law. And I was just meditating on it one day. And I started looking up poison. And it talked about it being deemed as murder, attempted murder.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so here you are, you have a community that struggles with a poverty level of about, they talked about 30 to 40%, right? And so you know for a fact that there's enough data to show that this happened. This really happened. Everybody in the world knows that it happened. And yet you're saying to the people, yeah, we know it happened. And we know that your disparity is that you don't have good medical insurance many times. You don't have access to reliable transportation or whatever. And so, like you said, the roadblocks are there. But shame on the system.
Yes.
That thinks that in a court of law, this is justice. You can't make this kind of stuff up. This is like what best-selling movies are made of.
Oh, most certainly. We always expect the oppressed to clean up the mess. Mm. And that is a very dangerous thing, especially if we decide that we're going to buy into that lie. It's a lie, you know, but it's really interesting how, honestly, I believe that this is part of, you know, this is a part of the game plan, right? We screw up your community. We drag our feet addressing it. And, you know, we'll say we messed up, but it's on you to prove that something happened to you. Meanwhile, the state, its bureaucracies, they hold the data and they've had access to the data and been aware of said data, proving contamination of things beyond lead for some time. They sat on data until they were made to say something.
And see, you are a researcher. Just think about people that don't know how to research, right? Mm-hmm. That don't know how far you have to dig.
Oh my.
Because it's buried, right? Come on, you know, and you are a researcher. Just think about people. And so finally, you know, after you've been oppressed for so long, somebody tells you that they're going to give you $1,000 check and you're like, where do I go? Mm-hmm. When this is longstanding, if I were in a court of law and this happened to my baby, right, I would have a malpractice lawsuit, right?
Yep.
They would assess the needs of my child. Now you're talking about who knows how many children you're talking about. And so normally when they assess value, they assess what your child could have been or would have been. And I realized that I got so angry and I just said, Lord, they can't assess the value of our children. They didn't create them. They have no idea what is within them.
And they don't value them.
They don't. They don't. And so my thing is, I won't allow you to place value on my child. And I believe that one day, those people, whoever they are, justice will be served. And when it is served, it's going to be swift. Sweet. And it's going to be visual. Yes. And everybody is going to see it. You will not be able to abuse the children who did nothing. Their government made decisions that adversely affected them. And if you think that you can make a decision like that and you just skate with your retirement fund, I curse your retirement fund.
That's right.
I curse every investment that you've made on the back of our babies, because one day you're going to give an account and it won't be long. But we have to consistently fight and say, oh, no, you know, until it's your baby and or somebody, one of your grandbabies, you just kind of, you know, I'm sorry, we're not dispensable. We're you can't just, you know, yeah, their value of their life is not that important. And so it just makes me very passionate. I have to keep my emotions and anger in check, though, because eventually, and I want to just say this. The other thing that's really disappointing is there is more wealth in the hands of Blacks than there's ever been in our history.
Uh-huh.
And yet we shouldn't be asking other people.
So we need to do more to help ourselves.
We should be able to help. We do a lot in the third world countries. And I get that.
We go to South Africa.
But come on. We should be able to invest in. There's things that we could do that would send such a message. I mean, you talk about our ancestors that didn't ride the bus for 13 months. You know how devastating that was to their finances?
They made it work because they had to make a point.
But they were committed. Come on. And it made enough of a point to change things. And now we have access to more resources and wealth than we've ever had.
I would submit, though, although we have access to resources and wealth, our mindset is still challenged.
You're right. That's it.
And when
your
mindset is challenged and you don't know who you are, you don't know why your people are positioned where they are, you're lost and confused. And so while you think you have affluence and position and prestige and people are listening to you, a lot of these folk, from what I noticed, they're not really leading anybody anyway, you know. And so I share your concern with the Black middle class, you know, folks with money in general. We do have more wealth. We're not just concentrated in poverty. Some of us have figured a way out. We need to figure out how to not just look back from my perspective, because in the research field, sometimes it's, oh, you know, we have people left behind. Let's go talk to them about their experiences. It's not just that. It's also about empowerment, because the moment you tap out and you get tired of staying up until midnight arguing with folk, somebody has got to tap in. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's going to take work, but it takes all of us coming from a lot of different perspectives. But it does take those of us who are supposed to understand the Black experience to step up. At this stage in the game, we need everybody playing their parts and playing their positions. When we think about what's next for Flint and its people, I'm concerned about what's not in that settlement after people get that $1,000 check, after they do what they choose to do in the selected parcels with regard to the service line repair. What's next? My concern is that essentially the settlement that's on the table right now will not address the needs of the city. So if looking forward and even just looking at what's happening today, what's your take on what we needed to help Flint get back to where it needs to be? Why are we going to get to the place where Flint's kids will have the resources they need to learn, where people can reasonably expect that their water is safe without using a filter?
And that's a tough question. One of the things that Flint is fortunate is in that is, you know, as you know, with the new packet that was approved, we're slated to get about $99 million. Some of the things that money can be used on is infrastructure. Mm-hmm. The question becomes, and it's interesting, as long as I've been on council, we've been told that either through theft or leakage, we lose roughly about 40% of our water, even before we start to charge the residents, mm-hmm. right? And so that's always been an issue. Well, in a recent community meeting, one of the speakers for the city of Flint said that that's down to 9%. Now, that would be a miracle, yeah. right? And so
that was a large concern.
I can't wait to find out how true that can be and what we're using as far as data. Because if, in fact, that is the case, you talked about water cost. The residents of the city of Flint pay large water bills, mm-hmm. right? And so if, in fact, the leakage has decreased to such a, as you say, how do we pass that on to the residents while still maintaining the water and sewer funds? Because that's an enterprise fund. For many people that don't understand that, that means that fund is designed to make money. It has to sustain itself. So with that being said, there has to be some sort of relief for the residents, because many residents, depending on their income, they're spending too much on a water bill. And even under the United Nations, there's only so much of a percentage that people are supposed to be paying on water.
Correct.
And I don't know why that's not equating to us, right? There's a lot that I'm not understanding. Because if people are spending 20 to 30% of their monthly income on a water bill, it seems like we're in violation. How can that be? So I know I said a lot, but we have to figure out how to be able to perform the things that are necessary to ensure that our water is properly treated. But as anyone knows, when you've experienced trauma, the mind doesn't trust that what you're saying
Absolutely.
Is true. Even if the water might be good, the mind says, you fooled me once. Mm-mm. I can't let you. And because those that are telling us the water is good have been the very ones that manipulated and defrauded us.
That's correct.
your word is not good. And because this is so large on a federal and state level, we don't trust the third parties that you bring in because we don't know what their motive is, because we can't believe that their motive is for us. And so there's this pessimistic thing within us that we didn't feed.
It lives.
Someone ignited in us.
But it lives. And for good reason.
It does.
Good reason.
It does. It does. And so with that being said, it's going to take a very strategic plan and execution along with the resources to make this right. But it's going to take years because you're talking about 5 years, 6 years now of injustice. And someone decides that they're just going to sweep it under the rug. And, you know, it's just Flint. Mm-hmm. They don't matter. We'll give them, you know, we'll give them some crumbs because I'm sorry, that is crumbs. And most people aren't even going to get it because they can't provide, like you said, the required documentation. Do you know that one of the requirements for, like, let's just say you want to sign up online for the Flint water settlement, you had to have the ability to download your ID and upload it. Come on now. You're talking about, no offense to our community, but you're talking about we struggle with illiteracy.
That's correct.
And so you continue when, in fact, you have all the data to see that this is a valid resident. You have the ability to go to active water bills. You Absolutely. Understand what I'm saying? I'm telling you. Oh, girl,
and I would add, when I was speaking with people during this process, I ran into too many people who were dealing with attorneys that would disappear. They filled out paperwork and then months later they'd wait around and, you know, they're expecting a follow-up or something. Months later they call, that attorney's office is closed or the number changed. My concern is that people have just been, you know, played in this and they're constantly put in a space where they have to do the work and then do some more work only to end up this is my take. They're just standing still. You didn't push anybody forward. You're not putting anybody in a better position. You're making them do the work and you're making the process harder than it needs to be only to give them a few coins.
And don't forget the star power. Don't forget the stargazers, right? Mm-hmm. We had the celebrities that came into our community
and they coming
and made
up.
Everybody think the lawyers is the answer. And where are they now?
They coming.
Where are they?
They're gone. Because what happens is that when an issue emerges, we're like, oh, we got to get there. We got to help them. We got to pull. They need support. They can't help themselves. But the interesting thing is that folks were there because Flint, they were helping themselves, you know. Right. And so it's so sad what's happening now. But I'm still amazed by the ingenuity, the energy, just the fact that people are willing to stick to this issue mm-hmm. and not mm-hmm. let it die. Because mm-hmm. it takes a lot of audacity for a state to say, okay, we're going to do what we do. And we'll say we're sorry, but I'm going to need y'all to be okay with walking away. And I'm going to make it very difficult for you to do anything else. And so this is a very deep period that I think we all must learn from and continue to sow into so that we can, you know, do our level best in our respective way to make it better. Because I never forgot about Flint. Flint is in me. When this was happening, I had to stop myself from watching the news in Flint. It was just that deep because I couldn't believe it. And so I know I have to let you go. I do want to thank you for your time, your service, your commitment to social justice. I just want to thank you.
I thank you. I just have to tell you that today you have really inspired me again to know that there are still people that are crying out for Flint, that refuse to be silenced, that are using their influence on behalf of residents of Flint. And you're a Flint kid.
That's right.
And so it's in you, like you said. And I just want to say that our children, their lives, even though they don't know you yet, because they will, their lives are enriched because of you. You are a voice that says, I will be a voice for you. And as long as I have a voice for you, you will always be heard, even when people don't want to hear it. And so I thank you for your work. I thank you for your commitment. I thank you for sowing back into your roots to ensure that whatever you can contribute that will help this community remain steadfast, that you're willing to do it. And I can't thank you enough. I really can't. This has been an honor. Just to be able, it's been like a therapy session, if you will. Sometimes saying it out loud
is helpful.
Just helps you. You know, I need to just say it out loud. And I pray your protection as you go through this, that the Lord would keep you, that he would protect you, that he would divinely cause you to intersect with people of like minds and passion that have the ability to make a difference.
I appreciate you so much for saying that. It's very meaningful to know that your work is helping folks. I'm just overwhelmed. Thank you again for the time spent. I got a lot from this conversation because I realized that people still need the mic. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if folks in Flint were tired of talking about this, but I'm so glad that you're willing to share this testimony because it's going to touch people. Your service, just learning about your life, your walk, is going to touch people. But learning about the struggles that people in Flint are confronting, I think that's the part that's really going to hit home for folks. I'm just so glad that you were willing to provide that lens for us today.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
To learn more about the crisis, be sure to pick up your copy of Clink to Tap, Flint's Journey from Crisis to Recovery on Amazon or your favorite digital bookshelf. Thanks for tuning in to the Tana Tap podcast. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Till next time, pivot forward.